Before we start on this item, I'd like to give a little background, and that is over the last several weeks, the Trial Court Budget Working Group and its subcommittees, many members here, in consultation with the appellate court leadership and judicial council members, have conducted extensive reviews of many of the programs, fundings, and court programs. The Trial Court Budget Working Group, as you know, consists of 15 presiding judges and 15 court executives. They make up the working group, and they provided us today with the recommendations that you have before you regarding on allocation of funding and reductions. In addition to the Trial Court Budget Working Group, all of whom have serving one-year terms and have made these recommendations, we included for the first time the appellate court leadership. And the brief explanation for this expansion, as well as the Judicial Council, is the fact that what we've alluded to here today is that the $350 million ongoing reduction to the branch budget will profoundly and radically change how the branch delivers justice to 37 million Californians. And so I am going to have the group talk a little bit more about that process as pertinent, but I did want to introduce to you the folks here today, and I'll start from my left. The Honorable Administrative Presiding Justice Brad Hill from the 5th Appellate District, also our Chair of the Trial Court Budget Working Group, Stephen Nash. We also have Ms. Kim Turner, member of the Trial Court Budget Working Group, and we have Judge the Honorable Gary Nadler, member of the Trial Court Budget Working Group, and also we have Ron Overholt, Chief Deputy Director of the AOC, for this presentation. Thank you for being here.
To begin, I would like to thank our Chief Justice and the Judicial Council for the opportunity to present the recommendations of the Trial Court Budget Working Group. As we know, the judicial branch faces extraordinary challenges, as does this esteemed council. We are the third branch of government, and we are charged with facilitating the provision of justice to our citizens, which in itself is no easy task. However, this burden has dramatically increased as we must serve our citizens with dramatically reduced and inadequate resources. Given the financial limitations which saddle us, our Chief Justice formed a working group, the Trial Court Budget Working Group, in order to examine the financial implications of the budget reductions imposed and to make recommendations to this council. The working group itself includes 30 members. It is representative of the diverse trial courts, large, small, medium, urban, and rural. It includes presiding judges and court executives, and all regions of the state are represented. The charge of this working group includes providing advice on the total trial court budget process, considering trial court budget priorities, and making recommendations on the allocation of trial court funding, including methodologies for allocating trial court budget augmentations and reductions. When our working group met a few weeks ago, we engaged in what can be described mildly as a robust discussion, at times emotional, but always engaging, and always professional. Votes were taken and indicated not a unanimous ratification of all of the suggested outcomes, but rather a reasoned determination by the majority. At the end of the long day, the universal understanding was that balancing the totality of needs against fiscal limitation was a Herculean task, necessarily involving frustration, concern, and disappointment. I can, however, promise that the working group did its very best to accomplish its stated purpose in reaching these recommendations, which we bring before you today. And I'd like to ask the CEO of Marin Superior Court, Kim Turner, to continue at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Nadler. Chief and the council, I just wanted to make a few very brief remarks. And, Chief, I direct this first one to you because at the beginning of that meeting of the Trial Court Budget Working Group and the members that were asked to join us, which were the six appellate presiding appellate justices and a representative from the Supreme Court as well as the AOC, you really asked us to bring our better selves to the table, to bring our collegiality, our sense of branch unity, our sense of being one branch that has to deal with a devastating set of circumstances in a creative and respectful fashion. And I think that we did you proud. I want to say that I was very, very, and I've heard from my colleagues both on the working group and those that were in the audience, that they said that the meeting was excellent, that it was a respectful and full and comprehensive conversation. And so I really want to thank you for grounding us in that charge. I also just want to say on behalf of the trial courts that we are really in your debt for getting the governor and the legislature to give this council discretion to spread these cuts among not just the trial courts, but the other areas of branch governance. So thank you very much for pulling that off. That was very important to the trial courts. And finally, I just want to say that the first recommendations, there are two in this item number one, are really to look at the branch-wide reductions of $350 million. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Stephen or to Justice Hill.
Thank you, Kim. Good morning, Chief, members of the council. I'm going to be walking you through some of the numbers and some of the issues that were identified and ultimately getting you to where the budget working group recommendations were. As part of that discussion, I will be asking Justice Hill to provide some viewpoint and information related to what the Courts of Appeal budget situation is and some of the challenges being faced at that level. And then Ron Overholt will be providing information about what the AOC is doing in terms of current budget challenges, but how the budget reductions, as indicated, would be tackled. Stepping back a little bit, first off, for this fiscal year, the Budget Act of the current fiscal year included $350 million of new cuts to the judicial branch. The Budget Act scheduled $200 million throughout the branch, $200 of the $350 million. And then $150 million was scheduled only to trial court funding. The legislative action that did that, however, also provided provisional language that authorized the council to look at reallocations and redirections and so forth that would allow up to $150 million of funding offset that could be provided to the trial courts in this process. Some of the specifics of the language, it provides authority that would allow the council to redirect funding from other programs funded from the trial court trust fund other than court operations, and those would include the assigned judges program, court interpreter program, equal access fund, and a series of other smaller allocations. It would also allow allocation of funding, allocation of these reductions to other areas of the branch, including the Supreme Court, the Courts of Appeal, the Judicial Council AOC budget, the Judicial Branch Facility Program, and including Habeas Corpus Resource Center. Also, the authority allowed for transfers from various fund sources, including the Immediate and Critical Needs Account, the State Court Facilities Construction Fund, the Trial Court Improvement Fund, and the Modernization Fund. Now let's take a step back and look at cumulative reductions that have impacted the entire branch over the last few years. This chart displays, starting in 2008-2009, the judicial branch budget, and I'm including what's identified under state judiciary. That's how it's identified in the state budget. That's the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, AOC, HCRC component of our budget, and then the trial court funding is separately identified. But branch-wide, you can see in 2008-2009, we had $103.5 million of cuts. Moving to 2009-2010, those reductions were increased, and you can see the total impact to the branch had increased to $377.9 million dollars in 2009-2010. That's an important point in time because that was the year the legislature not only included reductions in the budget, but also provided the council authority to make a one-day closure, statewide closure in the courts. And as we all know, there was a lot of impacts and implications from that one-day state closure, and the users and our court leaders and unions and others were very concerned, sheriffs, various players. And as a result of that, the legislature actually restored funding in 2010-2011. So you can see the reduction, and this is a cumulative number. This is the ongoing impact, actually went down. So there was some restoration of funding in 2010-2011. So we were looking at $332.9 million of cuts. And then we get to the year of the cuts budget that impacted various areas in state government and state-funded areas in government. And for us, the total cuts increased to $652.9 million over that couple-of-year period. The legislature, this year's cuts, it was in two phases. The first phase, the legislature had approved a $200 million reduction, and that was scheduled throughout the branch. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Still talking about branch operations reductions. The funding of branch operations comes primarily from these fund sources, the State General Fund, Trial Court Trust Fund, the Trial Court Improvement Fund, and the Appellate Court Trust Fund for the Courts of Appeal and the Supreme Court. There are other fund sources that would not be included in any potential transfers, were not included in the provisional authority provided by the legislature. These are special purpose, special allocations from funds. Those would include the motor vehicle account, federal trust fund, judicial branch workers' comp fund, family law trust fund, mental health services fund, state community corrections performance incentive fund, and the court interpreters fund. Now going back to the $200 million, the first wave of cuts. So the legislature scheduled $200 million in reductions. That was the first phase of the $350 million. And again, this was scheduled throughout the branch, impacting all areas of the branch. And that was based on looking at the total operations budget for each area with certain adjustments. These adjustments were for court-appointed indigent counsel in the courts of appeal in the Supreme Court. There was a budgeted transfer of $8.1 million of funding from the Judicial Branch Facility Program to the Court Facility Trust Fund, and that's simply an item that is extremely underfunded, and that was not included in the computations. Judicial compensation, with the at this point fairly low vacancy rate and the need for, if there are appointments, there has to be funding to compensate judges. So that is not included. The assigned judges program is not included, which is also primarily compensation for retired judges. There's an adjustment we'll talk about later related to health benefits and retiree health for trial courts. That was not included. And finally, local trial court reserves and revenues were not included in the calculations. Subsequent to the legislature approving a reduction spread that took into account the factors that we just identified, other budget considerations have been identified, and those are identified here. So when we're looking at a spread across the entire branch, while the trial court judicial compensation was not included, the courts of appeal and Supreme Court have identified that the justices also likewise need to be, their compensation needs to be excluded, and the trial court budget working group agreed with that. Part of the realignment, we'll talk more a little bit later this afternoon about court security realignment, It was part of the overall justice realignment package that the legislature approved. That money, the function of that, that money comes out and is being removed from the trial court budget, and under local security realignment, that money now will be provided directly to counties for court security. So for calculating purposes on what are these operation budgets that you have to identify and spread the cuts, that money is now needs to be reduced from the trial court funding side of the picture. If you pull out security funding from the trial courts, the argument is that the security costs associated with appellate and Supreme Court, and that's funded for CHP, also needs to be addressed. So that is recommended for exclusion. And finally, court-appointed dependency counsel. So if indigent dependency counsel was going to be excluded as proposed, the dependency counsel, which is a requirement at the local trial court level, $107.8 million was also identified to be not included in the calculations. So as a result of all of those adjustments, we end up with an adjusted budget, you can see, for the branch of about $2.3 billion. So then what we do is identify of that 2.3, what share does each entity have of that $2.3 billion? And so it goes from very habeas corpus resource center, about 0.6%, Supreme Court 1.3%, all the way to trial court funding, and this includes grants and local assistance, and that's about 87.6% of the total. So then we look at the total $350 million reduction that was included in this year's budget for purposes of coming up with a proposed spread. First off, $350 million against that adjusted judicial branch budget that we talked about represents 15.2% of the total. So let's look how that 15.2% would spread throughout the branch. For the Supreme Court, $4.4 million, and that's based on their share of the total budget. Courts of Appeal, 19.6. You can see all the numbers. For trial court funding, 306.6% would be the 15.2% amount. And so that's the spread that ultimately was recommended by the trial court budget working group in our joint meeting. Now, aside from this approach of looking at total budget and percentages and then trying, endeavoring to equitably spread the cut, other allocation options have been identified. One of those is don't adjust what the legislature did at all. They spread $200 million and they left $150 million in trial court funding. We don't think that's appropriate, and that's certainly not consistent with what the Chief Justice has talked about and other branch leaders. So that's not recommended. The next one, offset reduction by elimination or reduction of 50% of the Judicial Council AOC general fund budget. There have been different options thrown out and suggested. Some have suggested offset the entire AOC budget first. Then if there's anything left, then look at the appellate courts and courts of appeal. Another option was this one where they said, well, do 50%. So that's another alternative. And finally, some have said, well, don't look at the total budget. Only look at general fund. Just look at what share of each or how much general fund is provided and supports each area of the budget. So let's talk about some of these other options. First off, I already mentioned the no adjustment to the reductions, so that would leave, we think, too big a share of the cuts in the trial courts. And first off, one of the things that was very clear in the discussion with the budget working group, and I think certainly with all the speakers this morning, $350 million, and this is just stipulated out of the chute, $350 million of cut. There is no way to spread this without substantial pain. It is it's a very difficult budget. So there is no optimal spread for $350 million. So again, the option that would leave a bigger share in the trial courts, we don't believe that is appropriate. The second approach, eliminate Judicial Council AOC general fund budget, essentially offset the trial court funding reduction by eliminating the council general fund support. Again, that we think that would be inconsistent with the notion of sharing the burden of reductions equitably through the branch, would have in some cases severe impact to services provided to courts. That includes legal services, education, all kinds of other services. We think that the burden of doing away with or eliminating or reducing some of those services would impact small courts especially hard. And then finally, the notion of, well, let's cut 50% or 100% or whatever it is, at this point appears, we think, very arbitrary and certainly not analytically based. Finally, this notion of, apply it against general fund only. It's a general fund cut. Let's just apply it to general fund only. And if there's other fund sources, don't look at those. That does not appear to be an optimal approach. It would substantially increase reductions allocated to the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, less so, but also to the AOC and Habeas Corpus Resource Center. That's because their share of general fund support is substantially higher and would result in a large disparity in percentage of operations reduced among these entities, and we have a table that displays this. So if you looked at general fund only, and this was the $200 million, this is analysis from that original $200 million reduction that the legislature had scheduled. The $200 million level, based on the calculations at that point, would have been about a 6.8% hit. And so this was the 6.8% column reflects what was actually done in the budget. And for the $200 million, again, that's that first wave of the $350 million cut. But if you apply that only to general fund, instead of spreading it out across all operations, as was identified, you would end up with some substantially different reductions. So Supreme Court, instead of 6.8% cut, would end up with a 16.8% cut. Courts of Appeal would end up with a 15.4% cut. AOC, 9.7%. The branch facility program is really an anomaly of the numbers. It's a very tiny little support budget, so I wouldn't worry about that. The trial court ops would reduce to 6%. Habeas corpus would be facing about 11.3%. So again, the notion is that model would have some real serious and disparate impacts, and so that was not recommended. So now let's talk about what the $350 million reduction, what are the implications for some of the areas in our branch? And I'd like to call on Justice Hill first to talk about, from the appellate court perspective, some of the challenges that they're looking at.
Thank you very much, Chief, and members of the council. Good afternoon. On behalf of the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court, I would just briefly state that we are very supportive of the trial court budget work group recommendation. I was at the meeting. It was, as indicated, a very thoughtful discussion and many varied ideas, but at the end of the day, I believe everyone felt that the ideas that were presented and the solutions arrived at were equitable to all concerned, not devoid of pain, but certainly thoughtful and good solutions. I would indicate that as the Courts of Appeal PJs, many of us have been PJs of trial courts. We understand the daunting challenges that all of them have and all of you have. It is nothing that really can be described if you haven't been a PJ of a trial court. You know, waking up in the morning and trying to figure out how you're going to cover your calendar, how you're going to find enough judges to meet the challenges that day, the number of staff that you have to find to cover those courtrooms. And then in times like this, the concerns that you have with respect to furloughs and layoffs and budgets. It's a daunting challenge, to say the least, and we certainly understand that. One of the things I'm not sure I fully understood when I was a trial court PJ is that as an appellate court PJ, you have not all of the challenges necessarily as a trial court PJ has, but you have a different set of challenges, one of which is the fact that we don't have reserves. We're statutorily precluded from carrying over money from year to year. So although we would very much like to be able to save for a rainy day and create the reserves that many of the trial courts do in a fiscally prudent way to save for that rainy day, we can't. So in good times, it's fine. When you hit a year like this, you have no reserves and no ability to meet those challenges. I will say that the courts of appeal have been meeting those challenges in many ways. We took the full brunt, 100% of those cuts for the first $200 million. Our court employees have not received any cost of living over the last 4 years. They take the same furloughs, one day a month, for the last 2.5 years. And we have been meeting those challenges by seeing how we can obviously find every bit of money in our budgets that we can. We appreciate, in light of the fact that we don't have reserves, the accommodation that the Trial Court Budget Working Group made for us. But we understand that we still have challenges to face, and all of us are getting together this coming week because the cuts are as painful to us as they are to many other courts. We are having to find money that currently we don't have. We appreciate the challenges that you face. We appreciate the gravity of the task that all of you are dealing with today, and we thank you for your consideration of the Courts of Appeal and the Supreme Court budget. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chief, members of the council. I'd first like to indicate how proud I am to be a member of the Administrative Office of the Courts. The AOC has been the subject of many comments, both this morning and over the last several years, but I have never been associated with a more dedicated, hardworking, loyal group of professionals than are here at the AOC, and I want them to hear that and know that, and I know the members of this council do, with a mission of serving this Chief Justice, this council, the courts of appeal, the superior courts and the public of California, and that is their goal, that is their mission, and the work that they do is very, very important to the access to justice. So that being said, I really appreciate Stephen Nash being willing to come back 1 week after his new gig in San Bernardino, and appreciate his continuing service to the branch and the AOC and this council, and to his presiding judge, Judge Elwell, for allowing him to delay his start in San Bernardino and also to lend him to us today to present this fine presentation. The AOC is fully participating in the cuts that have been applied to the branch. If you look at attachment 2 of your agenda and you see the spread, as Stephen indicated, of the $350 million, the AOC, along with HCRC, is slated for the highest proportional cut of any entity of our branch at 12%. When we first looked at the cuts based on the $200 million reduction in the first round of the budget back in March, the AOC's 6.8%, which was across the board 6.8% of the reductions in all areas of the branch, the AOC's cut was $8 million. When, as Stephen indicated, the adjustments were made to remove trial court security from the base of the trial court's base budget, that meant that the cuts to the AOC and the Courts of Appeal and the Supreme Court went up, and the cuts to the trial courts went down. And we fully agree that that was the appropriate move to make because the security was no longer in the trial court's base budget. And so when that happened, our share, AOC, and you can see it on attachment 2 here, computing ongoing reduction of $200 million, that's column E, went from $8 million to 9.7, so just under $10 million. When the additional $150 million was added to the reduction, then a full reduction would have computed to $17 million. So we started at $8 million, went to $10 million, and to fully absorb the reduction of the $150 million pro rata share would have been $17 million. The recommendation of the trial court budget working group is that that not be absorbed totally in the first year to provide the AOC with a bridge to next year when we would be facing that amount to make our cuts this year $13.4 million. That is a significant hit. It will mean layoffs at the AOC. It will mean that we will eliminate approximately 100 funded vacant positions that are vacant because we have not been hiring for the last 3 years. We will continue our furloughs that we've been engaged in for the last 2.5 years, just as the appellate courts and Supreme Court have been. We will continue that. The number of layoffs that will be necessary will be dependent on other actions that we take, whether it's additional furloughs or other cost-saving measures that we're able to do. Other impacts, and as we've looked at the budget cuts for the AOC, our first direction to our directors was look at ways to reduce the AOC's budget that doesn't have a negative impact on the trial and appellate courts. And that was the first priority that we had. So don't pass the cuts of the AOC onto the courts and cause them additional costs. And that was the direction that was taken and a part of the budget cut scenario. I will say at 12% budget reduction and $13 million, that's not possible to say we are going to cut the AOC budget and it's not going to have any impact on the trial and appellate courts. Almost everything we do serves the trial and appellate courts and the public in the process. So there will be impacts. You'll hear in the next segment the third segment of this presentation, a discussion about the elimination of $20 million from the Modernization Fund and what that means in terms of programs that are being eliminated or defunded for 1 year at least in the process. We have been shrinking. You've heard that somehow we're on a wild hiring spree. We have not been on a hiring spree at all. We now have 834 FTEs or full-time equivalent positions. That is shrinking. We are seeing AOC folks retire and look for other jobs, and we are shrinking, and we are not replacing folks. We are looking at reorganizing. Our Executive Office Programs Director, Ken Kahn, is retiring at the end of August, and that division is being consolidated with another one of our AOC divisions. And so as a part of the process that we're going through right now, we're looking at any way possible that we can be more efficient and find cost-saving measures in the process. So my basic message is that the AOC is fully in on these budget cuts. We're not avoiding them or somehow immune from them whatsoever. These are very painful cuts. And as I talk to our staff and indicate that some of them will not be with us because of layoffs or other situations, it's a very difficult situation, but we are fully in. We are not suggesting that our cuts be given to another part of our branch or somehow we are certainly not going to attack our colleagues and the judicial branch in the process of dealing with these cuts. The reality of this is that the villain here is the economy, and it affects all of us. And so we're dedicated to making it work the best we can. Okay, thank you. Just to recap for a second, again, we're talking about $350 million of reduction. The recommendation coming out of the budget working group was to spread it, and it's a big number, 15.2% throughout the branch. Now let's, and that's the ongoing reduction, but let's talk about the first year now. Because the implications of the cuts are so big and trying to deal with those at every level of the branch, for trial courts, there is some ability to offset in the short term some of the impact of these cuts. First off, accumulated reserve funding, and then we put on there where available. I mean, in some cases, in the most extreme case would be San Francisco Superior Court, where they basically have no reserves, they're very minimal. There's a few other courts where the reserves are minimal and negligible based on having offset and absorbed cuts and other resource deployment issues. Generally, there are some level of reserves that courts can use to, again, in one time or short term, be able to offset some of the impact of the cuts. Also, as provided by the legislature for the last couple of years, and again, that we were talking about as part of this item, there is an ability to do one-time fund transfers to mitigate on a one-time basis the impact of some of these cuts. These options, though, are not available to the rest of the judiciary, and access to reserve funds and one-time reduction offsets are not available to the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, HCRC, and AOC. And this isn't a complaint. This is how the state budget works, and this is similar to so for those areas of our budget, it operates very similar to agencies and departments in terms of the way that the state budget works. There is no carryover funding. It's one-year appropriations. But given this, one option considered and ultimately recommended by the budget working group was to provide one-time first-year relief in terms of the calculations and spread of the reduction. And so this relief would be provided on a one-time basis to the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, AOC, and Habeas Corpus Resource Center that would allow for some partial offset and ability to transition on an ongoing basis to the full level of cuts that would be ongoing. This approach would allow branch entities to implement ongoing cuts in a manner that would minimize disruptions in providing services and access to the courts. Under this approach, the first year cut would be less than ongoing, and so the approach would be for the Supreme Court and Courts of Appeal that a portion of the cut, so we talked again, there was two phases, $200 million and then the additional $150 million cut that the legislature appropriated, the total $350 million. And for that second $150 million, recommended approach would provide for courts of appeal and Supreme Court 85% one-time offset, for the Judicial Council and Habeas Corpus Resource Center a 50% one-time offset. And doing that ends up with the two different levels of cuts identified. The other thing is we will be talking more specifically about some of the offsets for trial court funding that the budget working group recommended in our next report, but those are incorporated in this table as well. So that if you apply those offsets, as indicated, the cuts that would be facing the courts this year are identified in the middle column. So the reduction to the Supreme Court on a one-time basis would be $2.8 million this year. That would grow to $4.4 million ongoing. So this year's cut would be 9.7%, still very significant, very substantial, and a real challenge. But that's real relief as they work to a much deeper cut than following fiscal year. Similar numbers and similar percentages for the courts of appeal. AOC, we said, would be a 50% one-time offset in the first year. So that would bring the reduction to AOC to 12% this year, again growing to 15.2% in future fiscal years. And then for trial courts, and again, this is reflecting some offsets that we'll be discussing and presenting to you, but at this point they're assumed for purpose of this table. The first year share of the $350 million would be about 6.8%, but again, that would grow to the full 15.2% and beginning in 12-13 and ongoing. And then habeas corpus, you can see the implication for them. This then is the basis for recommendations 1 and 2. Recommendation 1 is for the council to allocate $350 million of reductions on a one-time basis in 2011-2012, reflecting a discount adjustment to the first-year share of the ongoing reduction as follows: 85% for the Supreme Court and Courts of Appeal, 50% for the Judicial Council, AOC, Habeas Corpus Resource Center. And then recommendation number 2, allocate the $350 million ongoing reduction, as indicated in column M of attachment 2 of the report, based upon adjusted total operations budgets. This would reflect the adjustments made in the Budget Act of 2011 and four additional adjustments in the computations that we talked about. And the result of all this would be an ongoing across-the-board 15.2% reduction. That concludes the report.
Thank you, Stephen. Any questions, comments? Judge Wesley.
Thank you, Chief. At the Child Court Budget Working Group, there was a question asked Mr. Nash, of what the percentage of cuts were to the trial courts, the Supreme Court, and the Court of Appeals over the last 5 years, and the AOC. And you indicated that you would have somebody working on that and have that answer. Do you have that answer today?
I apologize, Judge Wesley. I understand that staff were still working on it, and we did not have it.
All right. Thank you.
Stephen, what review, if any, was done on the habeas center in terms of whether they needed more than a 50% discount this year, or savings, I guess you could say?
Not a lot of detail, not a lot of discussion on the habeas corpus budget.
And you heard the comments, I think, from the director today about taking their salary out because their staff salary is comparable, if you will, to court-appointed counsel in juvenile cases and on appeal, which I think would be about $600,000, if I recall. Having gone through that process of identifying comparable adjustments, would you agree that that would be maybe a comparable adjustment that we should consider?
I would think that that's something that should be looked at. It would seem reasonable to look at that.
Yes, Judge Rosenberg.
Ron, if I could ask a question regarding the AOC. I know when my court had some budget challenges years ago, we consolidated from a number of locations to one location. Has the AOC looked at that possibility?
We've been asked questions about the regional offices that we have, locations in Sacramento and Burbank. And we've certainly looked at that. We believe that the value of having the regional offices where we have divisions of the AOC that are able to recruit in Sacramento for former employees of the executive branch and legislative branch or people that know state government has been a big value to the courts and the public in the process. Likewise, to be able to recruit from the huge Southern California labor market has been a great benefit, where asking people to relocate to San Francisco is prohibitive. And so the notion that we would move 200 staff from Sacramento to here and the 100 staff or so that we have in Burbank that are providing services to the courts in from the general counsel's office, from the court construction and management, security, and a variety of the functions that are there would be more expensive in our view to bring them here, where I think we probably pay higher rent in the to BGS than we do in those offices remotely. So certainly it's been looked at. We don't believe it would be a cost reduction or like that.
Ron, have you looked at the regional offices in terms of attempting to consolidate or reduce space on those leases?
We have. We've I think close to $500,000 has been reduced from lease costs in Sacramento by consolidating staff that are there and leaving space that we had previously occupied. And similarly, in Burbank, we're downsizing our lease space to basically squeeze more people into a smaller space, and also realize, as I mentioned, we are shrinking in numbers, and so where we can consolidate staff, we are.
Judge Pines.
Yeah, I gather from the recommendation that's being submitted to us, we are asked to basically make a policy decision, if we accept this recommendation, that all of these entities should share the reduction of, with the same percentage of reduction. Is that what we're, is that where this leads to, if we accept this, whatever the final number is? In other words, that the AOC, the Habeas Corpus Research Center, in a sense, are viewed of equal value, of equal importance to the trial courts and the appellate courts in terms of what percentage of reduction they should suffer. I mean, isn't that implicit in our vote on this?
Well, as you can see, the proportional cuts or percentage of cuts is not equally spread.
Well, in the end, it's 15% at the end of the second year.
That's looking forward. We're talking about
that is a policy consideration. I gather the view was that at the trial court's working budget group was that reduction or loss should be spread evenly. Everyone should accept the same percentage. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's fair, as you heard the Chief Justice in her intro indicate, that we will deal with these this budget crisis as a branch. And so as we began the process of looking at how the reductions would be spread, it was looked at on a proportional basis. Ultimately, the offset to the trial courts is greater than any offset to the courts of appeal or the AOC.
I understand that, but just from our role today, one of our functions is to set some priorities. And an issue for this group is whether this reduction in our budget should be pro rata, this absorbed by each of these agencies in the same percentage. And I have some question about that. I've also heard the chief say that our chief priority has got to be to keep the courthouse doors open. And I've also heard a lot of people say that our chief priority has got to be access to justice. And I'm not, I don't agree that that means that the reduction should be shared on the same percentage by all these agencies. And I think that's something the council has to address now.
Judge Wesley.
Thank you, Chief. Well, I listened to the speakers and I read the letters that we received on the council. the California Judges Association recognizes that the AOC provides essential services to the trial courts and the appellate courts, but at the same time, they know that the cuts should come primarily from those parts of the branch involving non-essential administrative and management overhead. I think that's what Judge Pines is alluding to. I listened to Judge Lori Earle, the APJ of Sacramento, say that cuts proposed by the trial court budget working group place a disproportionate burden on the trial courts, their employees, and the public in favor of administrative services. I listened to Judge Catherine Feinstein from San Francisco tell us that that we should look to the administration, the AOC. They are right next door to this building, but they tell us to look to the AOC to provide some relief to the trial courts. So I have a motion. My motion is this. I move to approve Recommendation 1, and I move to modify Recommendation 2. The motion on the table to allocate the ongoing $350 million of cuts seeks to establish a baseline allocation of those cuts across the entire branch. I agree that the agencies directly involved in adjudication, that is, the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeal, and the trial courts, are appropriately allocated a pro rata share of the $350 million. They should share pro rata unallocated cuts to the branch. They need stability for making their plans for restructuring, and they need to know their ongoing shares of an outright cut. However, the administrative office of the courts does not fall into that category. The AOC is an administrative, not an adjudicatory agency, and thus is not appropriately treated in the same fashion as the adjudicatory agencies. In addition, this 15.2% cap for the 2012-2013 year seems to me to preempt the work of the SEC and other bodies that have been tasked by you, Chief, to review and recommend reductions in AOC staffing and costs. They may recommend that they need more money. They may recommend that they need to be reduced. But by this council voting for a 15.2% cap of the 350 ongoing for the following year, I think they're limiting the ability of the SEC to function as you anticipated. Indeed, we should be reducing our statewide administrative overhead just like so many trial courts are doing at the local level. The council should explicitly recognize that additional reductions to the AOC may be made as we see what the 2012-2013 budget looks like. Therefore, I move that the council adopt any reductions to the AOC budget made today as a minimum, and that the AOC and the council recognize that further allocations of the $350 million are possible this year and next year. That is my motion.
Can I yes. just make a yes. comment just before? Just prior to this public meeting, the council met in closed session concerning its voting practices. Under its historic and current practice, council action requires the concurrence of a majority of a quorum of voting members. Conceivably, with a quorum of 11 of the 21 voting members, just 6 members could act on behalf of the council. While this has never occurred, after considerable deliberation over the last year, the council has opted to change its practice to require a concurrence of the majority of voting members, that is, a minimum of 11 votes, to affect council action. The new practice is prudent, and it is good policy. It sets a high bar for council action and demands an even higher degree of consensus on the complex issues that come before this body. And I just merely wanted to repeat what we had discussed and had considered earlier so that we're all aware of that when we take our votes today. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Judge Waters.
I'm going to ask Judge Wesley if he would consider breaking his motion down into two parts. The first one dealing with the first recommendation from the trial court budget working group, which is the one-time spread with the adjustments for the appellate courts, and secondly, then deal with the issue of ongoing or future cuts. And the reason I do that is twofold. Number one, I have a sense that maybe that first recommendation will probably not meet, motion will not meet with a lot of discussion or opposition. Second, I'd like to ask you to amend it because I would like to propose that with respect to the habeas corpus center that we adjust their operation base to reduce or take out their staff attorney. But that's a separate motion. First, right now, just whether you'd consider breaking your motion in two.
I'll do that.
Thank you.
Would you mind repeating then what the
first so what, part of the motion what would they be then?
There's two recommendations. There's two recommendations, and my motion goes as to the second, not the first. So I think what Judge Waters is asking me to do is make a separate motion as to recommendation one. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, then I'll move to approve recommendation one.
Second.
Second by Judge Penrod and a second by Judge O'Malley. So in terms of recommendation number one, fully stated on page two of your handout, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Matter carries.
I apologize, Chief, but I actually was going to ask for an amendment to allow for an adjustment to the HCRC operating budget. I don't know if I'm too late now.
No. Why don't you make an addendum amendment to number one, a recommendation?
Okay. I would move that with respect to recommendation number one, we adjust the HCRG operation budget to reduce or deduct the staff attorney compensation. And according to the letter received to the council on July 21st, that would be $4.8 million or almost $4.9 million in their adjusted operation budget.
Any discussion on the...
Is there a second?
I would second.
Well, and any discussion? Second is by Judge Kaufman. Any discussion?
I just have a question of if you make that adjustment, where does the other adjustment come from?
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't know where that money comes from and out of what other fund does that
so
come
from. So it would just...
Go ahead, Steve.
So it would just spread...
The rest of it different
it would just spread percentage-wise.
It would be about a 600,000 spread.
It would be, yeah.
But tell me what that means then when you're saying that's a... Because you said 4.8
so
and 600,000.
So I don't know the exact numbers. We'd have to look at the numbers. So I don't know if the number's correct. But if there is a reduction made to the cut to the HCRC, then proportionally it would spread, again, based on those percentages we talked about, to Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, AOC, trial court funding, and judicial branch facility program based on their relative share of the total budget.
I think it's about 598,000, right?
So I don't know the specific number. But.
Yes, Judge Yu.
So I'm going to ask if Judge Waters would mind if we don't vote on her motion yet and have the opportunity for people to discuss other items or line items, because what I can envision that might happen is we're going to vote on one thing, and if we start doing this piecemeal, the numbers aren't going to necessarily add up at the end. The other thing I wanted to say was that I listened to the morning session of the Trial Court Budget Working Group. I had a calendar in the afternoon, so I couldn't listen to the afternoon. But one thing that I heard from Kim Turner and others was a discussion of what the AOC presents or offers to courts of various different sizes, and I'd like to hear more about that. My experience with AOC is from the receptionist to everyone that I've worked with over the last 10 years, that it is a group of well-intentioned, well-run, and well-led people. My other question is whether or not we've looked at an issue that to me seems protected. There is one group that is not taking any cuts, and I understand there's legal and constitutional reasons for that, but judges are protected in this budget working group that we've looked at. And in the past, when we had the furloughs, courts allowed their judges to voluntarily waive salary, and that resulted in cost savings to the court. And I wonder if we've looked at whether there's a program that would allow bench officers to voluntarily waive perhaps salary for a day, a month, or whatever it is, to help our courts recoup and really spread the sacrifice to every person who's in the courts.
And I would say that in 2009, with the one-day-a-month closure, that was done pursuant to legislation, and there was also legislation that provided for a salary give-back by judges, but those statutes have sunsetted. So there's no statutory authority to have a program like that at the moment, and no legislative language has been suggested or offered on that.
Ms. Turner.
Thank you, Chief. As Judge Yu asked, I would like to offer a few comments on behalf of small and medium-sized courts that do rely very heavily on the services received from the AOC in legal matters, in finance and budget, you know, certainly the Phoenix program and others. And I want to just say that I think it is very difficult. It's a little bit of a slippery slope to call trial court operations, those things that happen in the courtroom or at the clerk's filing window, and to separate court administration from that equation, because they are inextricably linked. I look to my fellow CEOs around the table here and those of the audience who can speak on this issue as well, which is that, you know, the operations will not go forward if we don't have a budget in place, if we don't have a personnel plan and policies, if we don't have appropriate levels of infrastructure both administratively and in our facilities to be able to execute the contracts and the employee labor agreements and manage the budget and manage procurement and all of the myriad of other things that administrators do to keep the operations running smoothly in a trial court. So to sort of identify administrative services at the AOC as somehow different or more vulnerable, I think, than the operations that happen in our trial courts, especially for courts that rely heavily on the AOC for those services, I think is a bit of a problem. It's certainly a problem for the small courts, the medium-sized courts, and those that have come to, as Judge Yu said, expect responsive, timely, and very competent and excellent service from the AOC. So I offer those comments because I want to make sure that we don't somehow treat administrative services as significantly different from those of operational services.
Mr. Roddy and then Judge O'Malley.
You know, I think maybe what the council has done with this particular motion and severing the two issues may be the best course of action, because we've put in place the allocation for 11-12, recognizing that certain parts of the branch will bear the burden more than others. But it's going to take, I think, some considered evaluation to determine what are the appropriate necessary levels of infrastructure support, and to simply say cut 50% here, cut this there without that kind of analysis and looking at more specifically what is of direct benefit to the trial courts and to the branch as a whole, because I think there are also things that the AOC does that benefit the branch as a whole that most of us never see in terms of reports to the legislature, in terms of tasks that they've been given above and beyond daily trial court operations that aren't fully evaluated. I think that's something the SEC is going to be looking at. And to sever the 12-13 and 13-14 allocations, I think in hindsight this may be the best course of action, because it gives us the intervening months to do that appropriately. I mean, I just did some quick math. If you say to me as a trial court administrator, based on a pro rata across the board, you're looking at 15.2%. For planning purposes, that gives me an idea of where we could land. Clearly, the effort's going to be in the intervening months to reduce that, because I don't think any court can absorb that level of reduction. I mean, the 11-12 allocation is going to be coming up at 6.8%. The trial courts, we get to 15.2, we all could be San Francisco, okay? But then the focus of our effort is addressing that 15.2% hole, whether it's through some other mitigation measures that may become apparent, additional fund shifts that might be available to us next year down the road,
further modifications to the AOC's role and responsibility and missions in a very deliberate, considered basis. But for planning purposes, I think we've done good enough to tell me and tell other CEOs and PJs, you better be looking at about 15.2, and we'll do our best to get better than that and leave 11-12 where it is.
Thank you. First, Judge, no longer Judge O'Malley, Judge Waters.
Judge, you asked me a question, which was whether we could defer this issue until we discuss other aspects, and I don't think we can. This report deals with how we're going to spread the 350 across the entire branch. I think what you're maybe referring to, and if I'm wrong, correct me, have to do with more the allocations and the offsets in the trial court budget portion, which is report number two. What I'm trying to achieve is some consistency for the Habeas Center by eliminating their attorneys in determining their base budget, just as we have eliminated the counsel for indigents in the appellate process and in the trial court's juvenile side. And I think that warrants that consistent treatment. So I think it needs to be decided to determine what the spread's going to be. But if I'm misinterpreting you, please let me know.
And I believe the status of your motion then, Judge Kaufman seconded it. Any more discussion on backing out the habeas corpus resource salaries of attorneys from this computation? I know it's...
I just want to clarify, if you back out the salaries of all the attorneys, you back out the entire budget. And so I think if you follow the Director Lawrence's recommendation that he's seeking the same level of offset that the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeal receive, that is at 85% relief.
Right.
So if you're trying to meet his recommendation, that's what you would be doing. And that results in the close to $600,000 or whatever it is when Stephen calculate what the number is. But it's affording them the same relief as the appellate courts.
I have no reason to doubt your interpretation is better. I was listening to his comments and also following the letter that was sent. I may have the numbers wrong, but I think you and I are hearing the same thing. It is about a $500,000-$600,000 in the overall reduction in their cut. Reduction in their cut is the right way to word it.
Exactly.
So, in other words, it's the same percentage as the Court of Appeals, Supreme Court, and you're not tying it necessarily to the language of attorney salary.
No, I'm not.
Wait, let me hear. I saw a hand raised.
Well, I have a question.
No. Judge Wesley and then Judge Rosenberg.
So this would then the trial courts, the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court would pick up this as an additional cut to their budgets. Am I correct?
That's right.
Yep. That's right.
Thank you.
I'm hearing that the maker of the motion and the seconder are accepting Mr. Vickery's comment as a friendly amendment, so that is now the motion.
That's right. Justice Baxter.
I'd just like to inquire of the trial court budget working group whether this was an issue that was addressed or overlooked or what.
Yeah, it was not discussed.
It was not discussed.
It was not discussed at all.
Other than just... The 50% level that was ultimately recommended.
So just for clarity, how much is involved here?
So I we'll have to calculate.
On page two, you say the Habeas Corpus Resource Center is $13.789 million, right? It's $13.789 million.
We'll calculate it real quick.
It's $13.789 million. You take out about $4 million or some of that, and you take 15.2 of that, you get to about $600,000.
We'll calculate it real quick.
It spread the rest.
Trial courts, appellate courts, Supreme Court, and ALC.
So I just have a question. So while they're doing that, our first vote that we took, is that now moot or? Where are we on the first vote we took?
Well, on our first vote, for recommendation number one, it passed unanimously without negative votes.
Okay.
We consider Judge Waters, I consider Judge Waters an amendment, but a separate motion to treat HCRC, even though it's contained within motion number one, the recommendation number one, it's the last entity. That's an amendment to the past motion.
Yes.
And I'm still waiting to hear the number, and then we'll ask if there's further discussion before we vote on Judge Waters' amendment.
Doing a quick calculation, looks like it's about $315,000 that their reduction would be reduced.
Is that the total?
That would be the total reduction. So the number, what would their total cut be?
Chief.
Yeah, so their current cut right now, what's the total? So it would drop to about $1.2 million for habeas corpus in 11-12.
From the
2.1. We're talking about 11-12?
So it's $1.649 million. So I'm looking under column I. That's the 11-12 reduction. And for habeas corpus, it's 1.649 with a 50% one-time credit against part of the cut.
So what would be their percentage of reduction then?
So if they were reduced to a 15% cut, similar to courts of appeal and Supreme Court, that would drop them about $315,000.
Behind you is Mr. Lawrence. I just wanted to let you know.
If I may, what we were proposing was to exclude the attorney salaries from our operating budget. We were not looking for a reduction from the 85% or the 50% one-time allocation. And our attorney staff compensation is $4.8 million. That's on page 2 of the letter. What we were trying to do was to see a comparable figure for just attorney salaries that are also reflected in the Indigent Defense Council program. Once we reduce our overall budget by $4.89 million, that leaves $8.9 million for us to then take the reduction from. And that works out to, once that operating budget is adjusted, it then makes our share of the overall cuts at $1.07 million. Instead of $1.65 million in 2011 and 2012.
Yeah.
Okay. It's approximately $600,000.
Does Hall then Judge Pines?
Thank you. And I understand, just following up on that, that $600,000, according to Judge Wesley's question a moment ago, would be spread across the rest of the branch in the same percentages as we voted on a moment ago here?
Right. That's correct. Judge Pine.
Just a couple of comments. Now, we're singling out this one budget operation for particular discussion. I'm just trying to understand, why are we making that distinction for the Habeas Corpus Resource Center as opposed to any other function that's being funded here? I still don't understand why we would make that exception.
I think Judge Pines that when we prepared the budget, maybe Stephen can go through this again, but we exempted Dependency Council, we exempted the Appellate Defense Council, and so Michael Lawrence is asking to treat the Habeas Corpus Resource Center in a fashion similar to the treatment of the appellate projects and the treatment of the Dependency Council. And so by pulling out the budgets, and you may get to the same numbers both way, but if you pull out the budget of the lawyers, then it would reduce his cut and then treat him the same as the assumptions for the trial and the appellate budgets, I think is the...
In recognition, as I understood it, that the work of the habeas attorneys is comparable to the work of the council appointed for indigent defendants in the appellate courts and for in juvenile cases.
Any further discussion on this motion? Yes.
I just want to make
clear, Alexander.
It's back to being take the salaries out and then readjust, or is it 85%?
I think his model works better, and if that's the number that Stephen can have, we'll have to go back over that. But
so, can we have you, Stephen, state the with some specificity how the attorney's salaries would be excluded out of the Habeas Corpus Resource Center on this motion?
So, and I don't have the specific detail that Mr. Lawrence was citing, but to the extent that the council wishes to offset and do an adjustment to Habeas Corpus Resource Center related to the compensation provided to their attorneys, we need to identify what that number is, and I'm sure Mr. Lawrence has that correct number. That would be reduced from the base. Then you'd apply the percentages that are identified to come up with an adjusted number. And then whatever that adjustment is, if it's 600,000, and that's what they've indicated, it's a calculation. Staff are going to need to look at it and just make sure the number's right. If it's 600,000, then again, that would spread to the rest of the branch, that share of the cut, because the 350 million, that's a piece of it. That cut has to go somewhere, so it would spread under the formula to the rest of the branch based on the relative percentage of the different areas of the branch.
Okay, so I understand then that as you just indicated, once the attorney compensation, whatever that number, is backed out of the HCRC base budget, then the reduction as scheduled would apply to the balance.
That's correct.
Any further questions? Discussion on this matter before I call for a vote? See no hands raised. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Opposed.
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 Okay. Opposed. We're going to do a roll call vote.
Judge Wesley?
No.
Judge Waters?
Yes.
Judge So?
Yes.
Judge Smith?
Yes.
Judge Pines?
No.
Penrod?
No.
Judge O'Malley?
No.
Justice Miller?
Yes.
Miliband?
Not present.
Not here. Ms. Mathai?
Yes.
Ms. Krinsky?
Yes.
Judge Kaufman?
Yes.
Justice Hall?
Yes.
Judge Herman?
Yes.
Senator Evans? Pardon me?
Abstain.
Abstain. Thank you. Justice Baxter?
No, but with an explanation. I just too unclear at this point. I hate to vote yes when I don't know how many dollars we're dealing with, or I think there's just a lack of clarity. So if the matter could be clarified and re-voted on, my vote may very well be changed.
Thank you. Judge Baker?
Yes.
Justice Aspen-Gerst?
No.
You? Chief Justice?
Yes. That's 11.
11 ayes and 6 noes.
We count the FT.
Bill, I don't think I was called to ask for my vote.
Oh, why aren't you on our list here? I'm sorry. Could you?
No.
Thank you. Who else did I miss? Thank you.
Okay. Get an updated list.
Okay.
taking up, Judge Wesley, I feel your motion is a little bit in abeyance.
Yeah,
I sort of
felt that way myself, Chief.
But we haven't forgotten about it. But I know that Mr. Roddy made a statement speaking to it. So let's focus on recommendation number two and whether how we discuss that and whether we need to proceed with it.
Well, just for the record, I'm going to second his motion. He was addressing the issue I raised as well.
I'd like to hear the motion again, if you don't mind.
I think I should almost repeat it, but I don't want to go through the whole thing again. What I indicated was I'm recognizing the statements made by both the California Judges Association and the speakers that we had this morning, and therefore I'm moving to modify recommendation number two, which is the motion on the table to allocate the ongoing $350 million of cuts, seeking to establish a baseline allocation of those cuts across the entire branch. I agree that the agencies directly involved in adjudication, that is the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and the trial courts, are appropriately allocated pro rata shares of the $350 million. They should be able to make plans for restructuring. They need to know what their ongoing share of the cuts are. However, I do not feel that the Administrative Office of the Courts falls into the same category. The AOC is an administrative agency, not an adjudicatory agency, and thus is not appropriately treated in the same fashion as adjudicatory agencies. Moreover, it preempts the work of the SEC and other bodies that have been appointed by the Chief Justice to review the Administrative Office of the Courts and make recommendations in not only this year but next year. The Council should explicitly recognize that additional reductions to the AOC may be made as we see what the 12-13 budget looks like, and not limited to 15.2%. Therefore, I move that the Council adopt any reduction to the AOC's budget made today as a minimum, and that the Council recognize that further allocations of the $350 million to the AOC are possible this year and next year. That is my motion. That means that if the SEC comes back with a report this year, or the Council feels that additional budget cuts should be made to the AOC, that they could be made this year or next year. And there is no 15.2% cap with respect to the Administrative Office of the Courts.
Judge So.
Mr. Nash, is there any necessity that recommendation number two be acted on today?
It's recommended. It was recommended by the Budget Working Group and initially by staff because of the need for the various entities of our branch to identify. There's cuts this year that are offset, whether through relief or through one-time measures. But the full impact of the cuts doesn't hit until next fiscal year 12-13. And so for purposes of being able to manage planning, operations, and reduction and be able to begin to try to operationalize some level of the cuts, the different areas of our branch, because of the size of the dollars, need to have a sense of what they're facing. So that's what the purpose of recommendation two was.
Well, you've told them that what they're facing the next fiscal year is much larger than what they face this fiscal year. But aren't there a lot of unknowns, including the fact that Justice Scotland's group has not provided a report yet, the Council hasn't acted. I know the AOC is actively looking at consolidating and trying to cut programs and doing a complete top-to-bottom evaluation. So it's unclear exactly what's going to come out as far as that's concerned. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
You'll be dealing with 12-13 as that approaches. So this recommendation, I think, as Stephen said and Mr. Roddy said, was to give some sense of, you know, what's on the horizon if nothing else happens to mitigate it or it could be worse, but you're not taking action on next year's budget today. You're taking action on 11-12.
Thank you. Justice Hull.
I'm intrigued by what was originally Mr. Roddy's suggestion, and it appears to me that it might be wise. That way, for purposes of preparation, I would think that the various entities in the judicial branch could take what we see in the 2012-2013 forecast here as advisory, if not likely, absent something changing. However, it would give us the flexibility in the upcoming year to make necessary and appropriate adjustments to this, and specifically I think it might put Judge Wesley's concern somewhat alleviated as he sees this as being a cap on the AOC reductions. And I think it just gives us the flexibility to deal with these issues as they arise and not deal with them prematurely.
Judge Friedman?
I think we're moving in a prudent direction with some of the most recent comments. We don't know what the state fiscal situation will be next year. It could be worse, but there could be modifications. There are various groups that are planning or talking about putting measures on the ballot that would generate new revenue. We don't know what those proposals are. We don't know what the prospects of their enactment would be. So the prospects for anticipating the predicament that we'll be in next year now are very limited. We have some idea, and I think it's useful to give the branch and the courts as much of our best thinking as to what is likely to occur or what we think might occur next year at this point, but we don't know. And I think that prudence dictates us hesitating before we go forward with a recommendation that seems to lock in what the 12-13 budget will look like, when probably the only thing that is certain is it isn't going to look like we think it is going to look.
Chief. Judge O'Malley.
I would ask if Justice Hull would make his comments a motion.
Well, let me first ask. We have Judge Wesley's motion, and I anticipate hearing a second, and Judge Pines has seconded. We've had a discussion on, I think we act on Judge Wesley's motion. It's on the table before we entertain any additional motions related to the same subject.
Point of order. If someone wants to make a substitute motion, that would take precedence, and we could vote on the substitute motion.
Yes, pretty well.
Is this under Robert's Rules of Order?
It's according to Rosenberg's Rules of Order. But it is consistent
ask
with Robert's.
I would ask that Justice Hull do that if at all possible.
You don't. Well, I'm all ears.
Well,
I think perhaps we could, after this discussion, have if that is a correct interpretation of the rules of order, a substitute motion may have more clarity for going forward. So I would like that because I'd feel better about knowing what I was actually voting on.
Well,
go ahead, Justice Hull.
Thank you. If that's the case, procedurally, I will make that a substitute motion. In accordance with the comments I made a few moments ago, which basically say that we table or hold in abeyance the 2012-2013 budgetary numbers that are before us now to give us the flexibility to deal with them as events arise.
And I second that.
Right, Justice Hull's motion. Judge O'Malley seconds. Did I hear something else on this side?
There were like five of us trying to second down here.
I'm just going to identify Judge Waters on the record for that. Yes.
I thought you were trying to make something for this year and not just next year, Judge Wesley.
I was actually making something for both years, and so that really doesn't substitute for my motion.
That's what I was thinking.
What I indicated was that any budget reductions or budget adjustments that we vote on today for the AOC be viewed as a minimum and not a limit. And that's the first part of my motion. The second part of my motion dealt with there being no 15.2% cap, basically, which is, I think, on the chart that was presented to us for next year. And so I have moved that any reductions adopted by for the AOC budget made today are reviewed as a minimum and not a maximum.
And that's the second by Judge
right.
Pines. I know we have discussed in this substitute motion, but my feeling is it's getting more confused than it's worth. So I'm going to call for any further discussion on Judge Wesley's motion. We'll take a vote, and depend where we go from there. So all in favor of Judge Wesley's motion, say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
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 We'll take a roll call vote.
Judge you. Judge Wesley?
Aye.
Judge Waters?
No.
Judge So?
No.
Judge Smith?
No.
Judge Pine?
Yes.
Penrod?
No.
Judge O'Malley?
No.
Justice Miller?
Yes.
Ms. Bathai?
No.
Ms. Krinsky?
No.
Judge Kaufman?
No.
Justice Hall?
No.
Judge Herman?
No.
Senator Evans?
No.
Justice Baxter?
No.
Judge Baker?
No.
Justice Ashman Gerst?
No.
Chief Justice?
No.
So the motion fails, 16 no's and 3 ayes.
We still have...
Four ayes.
You say you have 4 eyes.
I have three.
By missing someone's vote, I have the yeses as Judge Wesley. Judge Pines. Judge, did you vote yes?
No, she was the first. No. No.
It was misheard and then it was
3.
Chief, then may I ask to revisit now not a substitute motion, but to make Justice Hull's comments a motion.
Justice Hull, I ask you to restate your comments in a motion format, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief, I think. I had a hard time doing it twice, much less 3 times. I would move the council to today decide... or decide not to decide on the 2012-2013 projected numbers that we have in, I think it's attachment 2 to the report, to allow us to deal with those matters as the events of the upcoming year, beginning now, transpire.
And I would second that.
Second by Judge O'Malley. Any discussion on this motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Matter carries unanimously. At this time, before we move to item number 2, we're going to take a 30-minute lunch break. We will reconvene at 2 o'clock. Stand in recess.